to the Global Health Podcast at Georgetown University, where we are charting new directions in health and development. Where here in our nation's capital, we have our hands on the pulse of global health. We bring you conversations with faculty and leaders in the field. From hearing about research in global health, alumni pursuits, and student field research abroad, you'll experience it all here on the Global Health Podcast. Welcome. This is your host, Bethany, with the Georgetown Global Health Podcast, and today we are fortunate to have a current student on the show with us. Rebecca Gribble will graduate the program this May, and she holds a bachelor's degree in nursing from the University of Adelaide, Australia. She joined the Global Health Master's program at Georgetown University in the fall of 2017, with 8 years of international healthcare experience. Through her time working in emergency clinical settings in Australia and the Middle East, along with health research in Canada, she brings an in-depth understanding of national health systems to our conversation. During her master's degree, Rebecca focused on health financing and international health responses. Later this year, she will join the Department of International Health, supporting the work of Georgetown's Urban Health Collaborative. Well, welcome to the Global Health Podcast at Georgetown University. Today I have our guest Rebecca Gribble with me. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you today. We're here on a beautiful day in DC. It's not going to last, I'm sure, but we are enjoying lovely 60 degree weather.
And sunshine.
And sunshine. So, Rebecca is you're just finishing up your studies here, right?
I'm just finishing up my master's of global health. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of just timing that all of the academic requirements were met in January, but official graduation is not until May. So technically done, but just waiting for that piece of paper.
Just waiting for the piece of paper, yeah. I was fortunate to actually come hear a little bit of your talk to the department as you came back from the field. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But just to begin, I always like to hear kind of about what or who inspires you in the field of global health.
So without sounding too corny or to try and pull at your heartstrings, people, not a person, that inspire me in the field of global health is when I think back to patients that I've looked after before, and regardless of whether that's in a high-income country or a middle-income country, and I think back to, you know, that individual level, you know, what impacts people's lives, what we can do that actually does make a difference day to day for people when they're seeking healthcare, and of course all of the social determinants that we surround that. And I guess kind of secondary to that, a huge inspiration, and I think something people that we can all look up to, are community health workers and clinicians that are really on the front lines in small clinics. And again, no matter in which country, sometimes with limited resources, high demands, and I just think that they are the best kind of people there are.
Yeah, for sure. And is there any really great books you've read recently?
So I read to unwind.
Yeah.
When it's all day of looking at emails and reading articles, I get to the evening and I read fiction just to get lost in beautiful writing and go to a different place. Into a story. So I usually read things that have some kind of social or historical aspect to that, and I'm just about to finish a book called A Gentleman in Moscow. It's a very slow-paced story, but it's beautifully written, set in Moscow just after the Russian Revolution, by Amor Towles. But I would recommend it just for a really nice story and a relaxing read.
Well, good to hear. So can you tell us a little bit about your path to Georgetown? You've had quite a journey, and I'm excited for people to kind of hear that,
you know, you're not necessarily the traditional right out of college student.
Nope. And
so how did you get here?
That it is a long story, and I think if someone had told me even 2 years ago, let alone 5 years ago or 10 years ago, that this is where my career would kind of redirect to, and also personally end up here in DC and in the US. So my professional life started in Australia. My undergraduate degree is in nursing.
Okay.
So that is where I started off, very much in health, very much from the clinical perspective, very traditional. I did all of my training and my first 5 years of working in very large tertiary hospitals.
In Melbourne?
In Adelaide and then in Melbourne in Australia. So in Melbourne, I worked in the largest emergency department in the Southern Hemisphere.
Wow.
So it was an amazing experience, absolute chaos the majority of the time, but it was, looking back, I see it very differently, but that was, it was working in a public health system in one of the largest public hospitals. We got all walks of life coming through the doors for all kinds of reasons. We couldn't turn anyone away. So our priority was to get through everyone that came to our doorstep through the hospital and through our emergency department, give them everything that we need and the time that they need in a way that they felt safe and secure. So it was a great start to any career. However, after 5 years, I'd reached the point that I could have stayed in that position for the rest of my career,
right.
Definitely. So I got a little antsy and decided that it was time to go out and see the world. And so I made the decision of all decisions to take my nursing to the Middle East. And I took a job working in an emergency department in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. It was a chance to see a very different country and a very different culture that not many people get to see, which was fascinating.
Was this your first time outside of Australia? Now you grew up.
So I grew up in Australia. I'm also Canadian.
Okay.
And so had spent a lot of time going back and forth. I had also traveled extensively kind of around the region, Southeast Asia, over to Europe. My parents live in Europe, so over to there too. So it wasn't the first time out of the country, but it was the first time living in a very different place,
different
language, different culture, just different everything to navigate.
Exactly. Now, did you speak any of the...
No. So the hospital that I worked in was an English-speaking hospital.
Okay.
So all staff needed to speak English.
Mm-hmm.
However, the patients that we looked after were all Saudi nationals.
Okay.
So some of them would have a few words of English, but the majority did not, which was fascinating in a way that after a couple of weeks, you turn around and you realize that you just performed your nursing assessment on a patient that you can't communicate with. And it just changes your approach in practice and makes you realize that even if you take away the spoken word, how much you can still communicate with people through gestures, through, you know, eye contact. And you do pick up on, you know, there are cultural differences that we needed to be very mindful of.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a lucky position, I'll put it that way, that because I worked in emergency, I could look after female and male patients. In the rest of the hospital, it was female nurse to female patient or male nurse to male patient. So that did broaden my horizons and my scope, and also some patients' reactions of, "Hi, I'm your nurse."
Wow.
And you just
cross-cultural and everything there.
Exactly. And so you pick up some basic terms
mm-hmm.
that get you through, like pain and bathroom and drink.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that you can still build those relationships
mm-hmm.
like you try anywhere with a patient, even
exactly.
with that removed.
And then from Saudi Arabia. I wanted to speak too because you were there during the MERS outbreak.
I was there during the MERS outbreak, so right in the thick of it, in the largest receiving hospital for the area and in the country that saw the highest amount of cases. I was there in 2013, 2014, mm-hmm. so just kind of after the initial spike that we saw in it. So I did look after a lot of MERS cases one-to-one, which was... It was difficult at the time because still not much was known about this disease in terms of how contagious it was, how severe it was. And even though Saudi Arabia is a very high-income country and I was working in, you know...
Very nice hospital.
a very well-equipped hospital, we still faced a lot of challenges. We actually ran out of the masks that prevent the transmission.
Wow.
For the emergency department. Right.
What do you do then?
So what do we do then? So nurses, like, please close your ears. that we would have to make a mask last a lot longer than it technically should and that it would ideally protect us for. Yeah. But there was no other option. We
you
had
did,
to go into those
did.
Rooms. Yeah. We had to look after those patients. And a large part of that, there was the medical side in terms of that, but then there was also managing the social side of it, that if you have a patient with this still relatively unknown disease that we knew or suspected that it could, you know, be very easily transmitted person to person and airborne, and you have a patient come in and 20 family members that come in with them, and they're all standing in the room, they're walking in and out of the room, could easily take it to other patients, to other staff, or out into the community. So a lot of it was also educating the families that mm-hmm. we know culturally and that you want to be in here with your loved one. However, we can't take that risk. And of course, all through a translator.
Right? Wow. And so did that kind of... spike your interest in global health or disease, or from there you left and you went to Canada. So
yeah, I guess that's kind of two different tangents. So it was definitely not that I knew it at the time, but it was definitely my time working in Saudi Arabia that made me stop and think about healthcare, and that I knew that as a general area, it was definitely what I wanted to do and continue to do. But being there and seeing, you know, kind of that one too many cases that come in and don't have the outcomes that you would hope for that individual. And, you know, after a couple of months, just kind of thinking, this shouldn't happen, and it wasn't for a lack of medical ability or resources at that point in time, but I did realize that even if I threw everything I could at this patient at the bedside, that there was so much more that led up to that point in time, and that I felt in a way restricted by the health system that you work within and also the social determinants that people face in their everyday lives as to what their health outcomes end up being. And there was one patient in particular that I remember, she came in unconscious. And I did my assessment, pulled in the translator, and, you know, one of the first questions I asked the family was, how long has she been like this? And the son kind of mumbles and looks at the floor, and she had been unconscious at home for 10 days before seeking any form of health care. And they lived far away from a hospital, and that was a pivotal moment looking back in my mind of thinking, okay, there needs to be more. Like, there needs to be access to primary health care. There needs to be education. There needs to be some openness around this. And also your access to healthcare shouldn't be dependent on where you sit in terms of income or economic ability. So that really just made me kind of stop and think that I felt restricted within the system, but also wanted to kind of make that shift from working on the individual level one-on-one to more of a population level when it comes to health.
Wow. That definitely, it's those kind of stories, I think, that really stick out in our minds and kind of help us on our way. So you moved to Toronto from there, and then from Toronto
to DC.
So to start the Global Health Program here. So can you tell us, what was it that drew you specifically to the program here?
I had been looking to go back to school for a while. As I said before, I'd hit that point in nursing that it was either stay in that exact position forever or go back to school and get some more qualifications. And combining kind of that point in your life with then the experiences that I had had and working with patients and thinking, okay, maybe this is time for me to redirect within healthcare. I was looking at public health courses and they just didn't jive, just kind of didn't speak to me, in that I knew I wanted to focus on an international level rather than a domestic level, kind of look outwards. And doing, you know, a master's of public health with a focus on international health just didn't seem like enough for me. So I was looking at for a course that would meet the basics, like everyone's favorite biostatistics and epidemiology. It would also provide that kind of global perspective and give you freedom to look across, you know, a whole range of countries, a whole range of income levels, a whole range of areas. So I started looking at universities in Canada and in the U.S. I have traveled a lot down to D.C. My fiancé lives down here. So I knew D.C. was would have been a good destination, which of course led to just looking at Georgetown and DW. And I found this course of global health at Georgetown, and I remember just reading the webpage and thinking, yes. This is what I've been looking for.
It brings together everything. It was the same for me too. Like, just wait, public health is kind of what I want to do, but
not quite.
And it brings these things all together. Same thing, like when I was on the website, like, this is it.
This is what I want to do, and oh my gosh, will I get in?
Exactly.
It was terrifying.
So what was your favorite class in the program? Because we have two semesters that everybody's together the first semester, and then second semester you kind of specialize.
You do. I'm going to choose two classes instead of one, if that's okay, and it'll become clear why. So as you mentioned, in that second semester, we are able to choose electives. So one of the electives that I chose was a global health course with Dr. Turbutt, his health insurance and risk management course. That I really enjoyed because it was an opportunity to go further than from the basic economics class and really delve into different health systems around the world. And the majority of my previous work has been in national health systems and in public health systems. That's what I believe, that everywhere should have some form of public health system that anybody can access. So the ability to really dive into different countries, different national health systems, and then also within those, how do you adapt to changing population needs or changing disease needs and make sure that these are robust systems that actually benefit the population they're intended to be for. So that was a fabulous class. It was also a really small class, so it was nice that, well, I looked at one country, the other students looked at different countries, so we could all learn from each other. We all presented to each other quite regularly, which is good practice for anyone.
Yeah.
And a great chance to get feedback. But it also meant that I only, you know, dived into a couple of countries, it meant I could see what other people were doing with other countries and really broaden that.
You're building kind of that like wealth of knowledge from your classmates. And I have a course that's very similar. We're reviewing health systems, and it's like, okay, you're doing this, we're presenting to each other, and you just build this wealth of understanding. So,
and I think that's also a great thing about Georgetown is the small class sizes, so that it's not You know, some of my classes in undergraduate, I would be sitting in a huge biology lecture theater as one of thousands of students listening to one professor speaking into a microphone. So being able to be such a small class size, it's more conversational with the other students, but also with the professor. You can stop, you can ask questions, you can discuss different tangents, and it just creates a really nice atmosphere.
So what was your second favorite class then?
And the second favorite was not a global health class. This is why I'm balancing it with two. So I was lucky enough to take a class outside of the global health offerings. It was a seminar on humanitarian and refugee emergencies, which was fabulous. It was with Dr. Ferris, and there was two of us from global health, and the rest of the class was made up of a couple of law students, and then everyone else was foreign service. So it was a little intimidating. Every week we discussed a different humanitarian emergency, whether that be a natural emergency or whether that be a war, either present or historical, and look at, you know, what were the preceding factors, what happened, what were the outcomes, in detail each week, which was incredibly eye-opening for me that it was a whole different subject, a whole different area to look into, and was fabulous to listen to what Foreign Service students say, where their mind goes that I didn't even know existed.
Broadens the health focus of our program.
Absolutely.
So to some of the compounding factors and other ways that people are thinking about
and
it.
And that's what was so great, is that I could listen to what a law student thought of a conflict, and the professor was amazing, and she would call on us and say, okay, but what's the health aspect of this?
Yeah.
And it was great personally, because you need to learn how to rephrase a health aspect for people that do not come from a health background, and we could have discussed this whole conflict without health even being a mention in it. So how to kind of be that advocate and have people consider that that is a huge, huge factor when you're talking about a refugee camp, when you're talking about populations on the move, when you're talking about injuries, and then the rebuilding afterwards. So it was really a great opportunity for me to learn from other professionals, but also it was a chance to make that case for health.
For health, exactly. Yeah, it is. And I love that interconnectedness of this program, that you're focusing on health, you're focusing on global health, but then you get these outside perspectives and education along in the program.
So, absolutely.
Now, you are also a GA and are currently a GA and moving into the department here. So tell us about your experience as a GA and what you'll be doing for the department going forward.
So I was very lucky to be offered a GA, a graduate assistantship, when coming into this degree. And it was a little bit of a different how it planned out, as opposed to the other GAs. I was paired up with Dr. Lise, who's the director of our program, and I focused on two main areas with him, one being urban health and the other being mental health. So we've kind of put together over the last now 18 months an urban health collaborative. So looking at urban health, kind of like we were just saying, is a bigger issue than just health and just clinics. But if we're talking about cities that have been growing and continue to be growing, a migration from rural into urban, how can we make that case for health to be considered when we're talking about either a slum area or building new areas of a city? So to bring in people from like city planning departments, mayor departments, community health workers, and you know, while and being cognizant of that Georgetown has this position in the world to be able to make a platform and really bring in people that are working in the field, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, which is where the growth will happen, is happening and will happen within cities and within populations as well. So to bring in people that are actually working in demographics in these cities and that are working in mayoral offices in these cities to see what's going on the ground, and also how we can present that to the Georgetown community, and also more on a global stage. This is what's happening, and this is what we need to be thinking of now and into the future.
We have to respond now.
Now.
Exactly. And we're kind of moving into a new topic. So a large part of this program is the opportunity to do field research. Now, some students coming into the program haven't done that. Mm-hmm. Now, you come from a very kind of global doing this or that and the other things, but what you want to tell us about your field research abroad, what that looked like. Some situations are a little different, but you had an opportunity to work with the WHO, so.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to work with the WHO, and it was at the regional office for the Western Pacific, so based in Manila in the Philippines. And a large part for me of coming to this degree, and I think for a lot of people as well, is that opportunity to go abroad for a semester, to really kind of get your feet wet and actually test out what is this field like and start building up that professional experience, and also for a lot of people, that personal experience as well of living abroad and the day-to-day life in another country. How do you get your groceries?
Right.
How do you talk to people? How do you commute? Which I think is great experience, and for me, an experience that never gets old, because everywhere is a new challenge.
Right?
You're starting from scratch again in every country. But it is a slightly different experience going to WHO, because you slot into their internship program, and you're working Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 for the WHO, which absolutely has its benefits. It's just a very different experience to the majority of the group that go and perform primary research in the field. And in listening to people that have come back and performed their primary research, what they have done is amazing, and that experience.
They're all just different, and they're all unique and valuable, and
exactly. Yeah. So it's just kind of two different streams, almost in a way to think about it. So at WHO, I was assigned to the Department of Health Systems, and within that, I worked in the unit of integrated service delivery, which was kind of a nice, landing point within this organization, and also a point that I could kind of lean into and build from experience that it was all about service delivery. And my preceptor was the technical officer for educational capacity and development within the Western Pacific region. So I was working with her. She was fabulous. And she also had a team with her as well. So it was very nice to actually feel like you join a team and are welcomed and work together with other people. And so I worked with her on rewriting policy for one of the WHO educational programs within the region. So it was a lot of work.
A lot of work and a lot of great experience.
But a lot of great experience. It was writing policy word by word, line by line for an active program, which is fabulous experience.
Yes.
And to have that backup of somebody to say, does this line sound okay, or does this make sense? And also being able to go, you know, walk to the other side of the office and go to the team that's actually working on this program, mm-hmm. and be able to talk to them. What do you actually do? And how can how can we make this policy that's actually useful and that is actually based on, you know, how it works, rather than being so removed from the day to day that when you reflect back to the policy, it might not answer your question. Right. So it was a really, really great opportunity from a technical perspective. Mm-hmm. And it was just great personally being welcomed into a team and kind of surreal. You know, you walk in the gates and you're at the WHO. There are all the flags flying from all the countries in the region. And you go down to the cafeteria and you have lunch with everyone.
You're there and you're working and...
Yeah, you have a name tag on WHO on the lanyard. It was a very empowering experience. And something that I didn't expect was just how welcoming people were to interns. Mm-hmm. I asked to set up meetings with people in different units, which I would highly recommend for anyone that goes there in the future, is to reach out outside of your unit to different technical areas and different specialty areas and just ask people, I'm interested in what you're doing, can I come talk to you?
Yeah.
And every time I did that, people would email back like immediately and say, yes, let's go have coffee tomorrow. And I'm still sitting there thinking, you did say I was an intern.
I'm just this little person here, like,
I have a few questions.
Life, right?
I just think
right.
what you're doing is interesting. I'd like to know more. And people were just so supportive and, you know, so sharing in what they're doing and how things actually work mm-hmm. within different units and within the organization. So it was a fabulous experience.
That's really exciting. So do you have kind of an end goal, a dream job? Has this program kind of obviously shifted your focus out of the nursing, but mm-hmm. where do you see yourself going?
I have many dream jobs,
yeah.
to be honest. And I think that's a great thing about this program, is that it really does set you up with a broad basis of skills that you come having. You know, you do epidemiology, you do biostatistics, you touch on economics and policy, so that really sets you up with the skills to take and to tailor into whatever direction you would like to go. And the same for the whole field of global health. It's so diverse and
right.
so varied. And that was a great thing about our class, is that I think everyone had a different interest.
Yes.
Everyone had a different specialty that was their passion,
mm-hmm.
which shows kind of the scope, but also just how much you can tailor it to what you're interested in. You can be as broad as you want to be, or you can be really specialized.
A specific deep dive into something. Yeah.
Absolutely. Just in finishing the program, there is a little bit of that sense of feeling that the world's your oyster and
yeah.
you can take this in many directions. But the two areas that I would love to go into and kind of hoping to follow pathways and find jobs that lead in that direction. One's very general in health system strengthening,
mm-hmm.
Kind of stepping away from a siloed approach to diseases, and looking more of creating robust health systems,
yes.
which of course ties into my background of working in public health systems that address
right.
anything that walks through the door,
right.
rather than, you know, specific funding for specific
right.
diseases or clinics. Because when you go to a doctor, you go for anything.
Exactly.
You might go for multiple ailments at once. You don't go to an HIV doctor for your HIV and a TB doctor for your TB.
Right, you need this integrated health system that can meet all the needs.
And absolutely.
It's very needed across the world. So.
Across the world, including here.
Including here.
And on top of that as well, I always go back to emergency situations and how important health is in emergency situations when a disaster strikes or unfortunately when a war breaks out or continues, just how important it is to be able to get health responses and health resources in to the people that need it. So
those are some great trajectories. So well, I want to thank you so much for your time here today and just taking some time to share with our listeners about your path here and what you've done. It's definitely exciting, and I look forward to seeing where you go from here.
Thank you. So do I, and that's what's so great and so exciting about global health.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Global Health Podcast, brought to you by the Department of International Health here at Georgetown University. We welcome you to learn more by visiting our website at globalhealthms.georgetown.edu or by following us on Facebook at Georgetown University's Masters of Science in Global Health.